crew.
Stop, Dave. I'm afraid.
We're here. It's Friday night. It's the Hour of Truth. We're talking about the Convention of the States. And we're going to be joined here in a moment by Mike Moon. Mike's going to join us on Friday nights at 7 o'clock. I'm joined here by my grandson, Judah. You'll hear him in the background once in a while. He's having a good time running around the office. And so we're going to move on with the news in Missouri. The front page of today's paper contains two interesting articles dealing with Missouri news. The propane predicament. The Attorney General is looking into why these companies are gouging us for propane. The leading theory is that propane companies exported too much propane to get a better price. And so Missourians then are being forced to pay for the shortage. It's an interesting question. We had this discussion at length a couple of years ago when we were running up to the presidential election, when presidential candidates were promising all kinds of energy independence. I questioned whether or not energy independence could be something that really could ever exist. I mean, we can manufacture a lot of energy in this country, but the question of energy independence boils down to how much is the federal government willing to nationalize or take over the oil industry? Because what's going to happen is if we drilled to the maximum capacity here in this country, if we, Judah, that's enough, be quiet. If we drilled every possible inch of energy, every possible ounce of oil that we could drill on a continuing basis, who would that oil belong to? Well, under our system, it would belong rightfully to the companies that drill the oil, companies that pay the money for the drills, companies that pay the money to the drillers, companies that pay people money. The oil is private property. So unless the federal government is willing to, someone call and give me a methodology we have for how the federal government or any candidate promises you energy independence without the federal government nationalizing that oil. That oil is going to go on the world market. It's going to go to the highest bidder. And if the price is up, we're going to pay the price at the pump. And if the price is down, we're going to benefit at the pump. Well, the same thing applies to propane. You know, you don't get to investigate. I mean, in the United States of America that I grew up in, you don't get to go investigate propane companies because you contend they exported oil because they got a better price and then dock them because there's a supply shortage when we have an exceptionally hard winter. Unless you are willing to go all the way and say the federal government should nationalize propane companies and tell them where they can and cannot sell their product. Now, we're going to have a very, very good show tonight. I'm looking forward to Mike Moon. And we may actually see him in the studio now. Mike, is that you? Hello?
This is Keith.
Oh, hi, Keith. How are you?
Hey, we're doing 100%. Keith Carmichael, just waiting.
Yeah.
I'm not sure Mike is, when he's able to call in, we sure want to make room for him. We got
oh,
a
we
chance
will,
to
yeah.
visit with him last night.
Yeah, he's a heck of a guy, isn't he?
We were both at the Southwest Missouri Conservatives organization last night in Joplin. We had a great time, and that's a great group. If you haven't been down to Joplin to visit with those folks, they're pretty amazing, and they're right on top of everything.
I spent some time down there with them when I was working for the Herman Cain campaign. So yeah, I visited down there before, and they are a great group of people. Another group that you'd ought to try to get in with, Keith, is, have you talked to Cooper County yet?
Not yet. I know this next week on the 13th I'll be with the Capitol Tea Party in Jefferson City at 7 o'clock, I believe.
Uh-huh.
That's it's about 7 p.m. That's in a Coca-Cola room. That's a 607 Washington in Jeff City. That's on the 13th. And a few other things that planned as well. I know someone, I believe John Putnam is going to be speaking with the Columbia in Columbia to that particular group. Is that Mid-Missouri, or that's one of the other Tea Party groups as well?
It could be either. Yeah. Okay, so how are things going over there at COS?
Say it again?
How are things going over there at COS?
Well, if you haven't been keeping track of it, folks that haven't, Georgia is the first state to pass one of their – they actually passed the Convention of the States application for restraining the jurisdiction and power of the federal government. They passed that in the Georgia Senate this week, and they're, of course, moving along in the House as well. There's a number of states that are either have filed and beginning to go into committee. South Dakota is in committee now with this particular application resolution, and they'll be voting on Monday in South Dakota. So there's just it's hard to keep track of everything. There's legislation in Wyoming, New Mexico, a number of states, and so things are moving. You know, it was evident as I talked to folks last night, you know, about some of the things that's happening. You may have read Senator Tom Corbin of Oklahoma, as most folks are aware, that he's leaving Washington 2 years early, and he corrected a reporter a day or so ago, and he said, "You should have read my news release a little more carefully. I'm not leaving because of his illness." He does have an illness that's reoccurring. He said, "I'm leaving because I have something more important to do." And specifically, he said he will be working with the Convention of the States movement and trying to motivate each individual legislature to move on this. He sees, first of all, just the fact that he's leaving Washington 2 years earlier is quite a statement. He's convinced that Washington will not fix itself, and the solutions will not come from Washington. It's going to have to come from the troops on the ground, the Americans on the ground, so to speak. And so you might also have read earlier in the week, Utah Senator you're going to have to help me, Dave. Mike? Are you still there, Mike?
No, it's Dave, yeah.
Yeah, I was going to say, Utah Senator Mike, and his name just escaped me for a second there. Utah Senator said that he is definitely in favor of Article 5 initiatives. And so there's been some real news on the national scale. Things are happening and moving right along.
Okay, I'm sorry. I was off fielding a phone call. Mike Lee's.
Okay. I had a snag.
Mike Lee's what you're
Mike Lee,
for.
Yeah. Mike Lee, yeah. Said he's definitely in support of Article 5 initiative. So one after another, some of the real heroes in Washington, folks that we would say kind of stand out as conservatives and kind of stand alone in many cases, are beginning to speak up about this issue. And I don't think that Tom Corbin is going to be the last to say, you know, I'm out of here because this is not our solutions are not going to come from Washington. He's going to go out and work with Convention of the States groups and to get this done. So we're pretty excited about that.
Yeah, not only is help not going to come from Washington, but you can expect all kinds of resistance to come from Washington. You can expect the Senate and the House of Representatives to do everything possible to throw up as many roadblocks on this thing as they can.
Well, and that's true, and history has shown us in every case, without exception, Congress responds. Now, they usually wait as long as possible, try to draw out the clock. But usually when there's 30, 31, 32 states, something happens. They usually respond to diffuse the situation in some fashion.
Right.
And from what I have gathered, the folks that that are behind the convention of the states, they're going to move ahead no matter what Congress does. I mean, they're going to move ahead to call a convention of the states for a couple reasons. One, so that our great grandkids or whoever may need this process as a last resort won't have to deal with the runaway convention ruse, because there is no historical precedent for it. And if nothing else, we're going to show that a group of state legislators can get together and be men of honor, and they can hold on to their instructions and represent their, their states in a responsible way. And the other reason is, so they won't have to hear this continual, well, it's never happened before. And so that's two real strong reasons why they will move forward no matter what Congress does. Now, in a meeting last night, there was really a lot of really good questions, but someone asked, well, what's going to happen if Congress does what they've done at least up till now, and they ignored the call? The reason that they'll be hard to ignore is that the identical language in every state call is nearly identical, and so they'll be hard to ignore it. But if they do ignore it, they'll be given a limited, a reasonable amount of time to respond. But if they don't respond, we're going to go ahead and have a convention anyway. We need to get this idea of state sovereignty into our head, and we don't need their permission to have a convention.
That's right. That's absolutely right.
Let them know we're going to have it. We can ask them to call a time and place. But if they do what Congress usually does, and they might, the states will have, especially when you have 34 dealing as a unit, they can move forward as sovereign states.
That's absolutely right. That's absolutely right. They're willed, and I had this discussion with someone who was arguing the point with us, I think 3 weeks ago on this very show. There will be a convention. With or without the United States Congress, there is going to be a convention of the states, and I'm excited about it. Did you hear a Wolverton the other night? Did you get
a chance to listen to that?
He was on Lisa's show the other night. Of course, Lisa Payne Nager, who hosts
Saturday evenings.
No, she hosts on Wednesday evenings.
Wednesday, okay.
Yes, and everyone should go listen to that podcast of that show. Wolverton was on. He's a big anti on this, and she is. She is opposed to the Convention of the States. And it was just really, it was more of this runaway convention. If you don't believe the convention can be a runaway convention, just look at what happened back in Philadelphia. These people, and it's just this kind of either misunderstanding or falsification of history that keeps, you and I had a talk 2 or 3 weeks ago, and you said, well, this has been debunked. You don't even hear people saying this anymore, but you do.
Well, the people who are out in the countryside are regurgitating it, Dave. They're regurgitating it, but the people who have taken the time to go do a little research are not talking about a runaway convention anymore, because there's no historical basis for it. It's just a ruse from the left, and they've picked it up, and they're showing their ignorance. I have to use that word, not in a bad way, but they just haven't researched carefully enough. Even Rob Nadelson, Bill Nichols with the Tea Party Patriots, just one person after another who is in leadership of some kind, will tell you that they always thought that this could happen. They've heard that it's going to happen. Nearly everybody who's gone and done the research comes back saying, it's just a ruse.
Well, and let's don't, brothers and sisters now, and Lloyd and I were talking about this last time he was on, let's don't underplay the reality. Let's don't underplay the fact that this is a risk, that there's going to be millions and millions, if not billions, of liberal lobby dollars being offered, being thrown out there to these delegates, to state legislatures, to everybody in the world to try and corrupt this thing. But Keith is absolutely right. The convention in Philadelphia was not a runaway convention, and this one is not a runaway convention,
There's a good point on that, Dave. There has been a couple of what you could almost call runaway conventions. They're on the state level. New York of 1821 was what could be called a runaway convention, but they were trying to disenfranchise blacks, and there was a man by the name of, I believe it was Stephen Douglas. I have to go back. That's not the right name. It's Stevenson, actually, and he was responsible for that. Then in Illinois, there was two conventions, one of which can be called a runaway convention on the state level. But what is amazing about that is that once that was over and those folks had taken this idea of a sovereign convention, the idea of that people who are sent to a convention can then go against and go above and beyond the authority they've been given and just make up their own rules as they go. The idea is that once they've gotten there, the people who sent them there then have made those folks as a convention sovereign. Well, that did come up, and that was in some fashion a runaway convention. But what's amazing about history is the citizens of Illinois and the legislature, when they finally made a few changes, completely repudiated everything that had been done. You leave it to the people, and over time they completely repudiated this group going beyond the authority that they had been given. But nothing on the national scene with anything federal, there's just no historical reference for any kind of runaway convention of that type when states are representing the individual states at a convention of the states.
Yes, and we have, I have in mind, now I'm you and I disagree on some of these points here. I believe let them fight over their balanced budget amendment, let them fight over their term limits amendment. That's all well and good with me. I believe that we need to come out of this convention with three amendments.
Mm-hmm.
But let's say that we come out with 10, and let's just go back once more to history, to the convention. Here is my point about the stop. The end game is not a convention of the states. That's barely the opening game. That's getting it together. We're probably in the opening game now. And then the convention is the middle game if you people are chess players. The end game is going to be exactly what it was. I mean, we come out of the convention with three solid super amendments, and then we go back to the stage in history where you saw the Federalists and the Anti-Federalist Papers. We fight that baby out in every state capital in this country. I mean, the fight is going to be long, and it's going to be hard, and it's going to be tedious just to get the good ones passed.
Sure.
It remains up to 38 of the 50 states when you come out with any kind of amendment to say yes. So, the process is long, the process is tedious, the process lends itself to open debate, to open forum, and to serious deliberation. I don't think this is now. Wolverton then goes on to suggest that. Hold on, I took some notes here. We were going to talk about this tomorrow night, but you're here and Mike's not, so we'll get into some of this tonight.
I thought we were still going to go over that one, that had three parts or whatever.
I'm going to have to do that tomorrow night. I had something come up family-wise tonight that didn't involve me, but required my grandson to be here with me, and you hear him in the background there every once in a while. I was actually just going to kind of do Mike and then get off and put everything else off till tomorrow night, but that's fine. You're here. Grandma's got the boy in there, so we're good to go. Wolverton, I don't know if you've been following him, but he's written the fourth, I think, of a series of articles today where he is contending that what we need is not to repair the Constitution, but to restore it. And you keep hearing this argument over and over and over again. You know, if they don't follow the Constitution we have now, what makes you think that they're going to follow the Constitution if you amend it? And all we need to do is educate people to get back to the Constitution that our founders gave us. Well, you know, this ties in so well with the runaway convention idea, where the founders got together in Philadelphia to make an attempt to repair the Articles of Confederation. And the smart ones knew going in, but everyone else found out fairly quickly that the Articles of Convention were irreparable. They were fatally flawed. They were broken beyond all repair. They couldn't even field an army and pay it. There was no way to force states. You had states tariffing one another for the use of interstate waterways. You had states virtually on the brink of war because of the deficiencies in the Article of Confederation. And I'm talking about states on the brink of war with one another.
Sure.
And
sure.
And my contention is exactly the same. You know, you can't, there's no repair. You cannot get back without a convention of the states the Constitution that our founders gave us, because the Constitution that public officials swear to uphold today is fatally flawed. It is fatally flawed. The 17th, the 16th, the 14th, all of the progressive era amendments. In fact, if you look at the Constitution of the United States, and I challenge any one of you to do it, open the book, look at the Constitution of the United States, read the Constitution, then read the first 10 amendments. The Constitution itself, the body of the work, and the first 10 amendments were all designed to keep government limited, to keep government, federal government, small, to restrict the power of federal government. From 11 on, every single amendment was to grow government. Every single amendment after that had the express purpose of growing the power of the federal government and infringing upon the states. So, you know, I argue, don't you, that there's no repair. There's no repair for a fatally flawed Constitution short of a convention that puts the Constitution back to, you know, you cannot repair the Constitution back to what the founders gave us. You have to restore it.
Well, George Mason, even early in the convention, said that this process, you know, early on they realized that they needed a way to amend this Constitution. They were smart enough to know that things change, and you know, they set about very early a process in which it could be amended. They didn't have the exact words, didn't really have a draft until August, but they set about, and George Mason made a comment that this process is to be, first of all, easy and regular and constitutional. I mean, that's his words. And June 11th, 1787, that this is something that should be done easy, regular, and constitutional. It's not a radical solution. Obviously, we've talked about it. It's not a constitutional convention. But it's something that needs to happen from time to time. It's the rudder of this document. It's the balance. It's a mechanism by which the states and federal government, the states can balance. And so, because they haven't used it, we're in a pinch. We're in a, as you said, they've won one of these, you know, that we're in a situation where it looks awfully bleak, and the answer is to simply go back, and whether you use the word repair or restore, you know, it's something that they put in there. Now, I was at the program last night, and I had a senator come up and tell me that there was a slide that we looked at together, and he said, that right there is the most compelling argument for Article 5 that I believe I've ever heard. And what it was is this. A fear of using Article 5, if we won't use it, it gives us a constitution without it. It's like having a car without a seatbelt. You can have a seatbelt, but if you don't put it on, then for all practical purposes, you're in a car without a seatbelt. this Constitution, if it doesn't have Article 5 in it, it's not the one that was ratified, and it's not the one that many have sworn an oath to uphold and defend. We need the Constitution in its entirety. You know, we look, if a public official decides somewhere along the way in their duties that they're going to pick and choose which parts of the Constitution that they're going to obey or uphold, we kind of frown upon that. But then we have folks who say, well, you know, this is a dangerous, you know what it, I like what Lloyd Sloan put the other evening. He said, what happened? Did the framers put a self-destruct button in the Constitution? No, it's not a maintenance process, and it's something that has to be done on a regular basis. And we're in this situation because we haven't used it on a regular basis, is my opinion.
And I said this. I've said this 100 times. I've said it maybe last time you and I were together. But, you know, it's important, this regular thing. And yeah, you know, 250 years, when we look at the amount of time that mankind has been on Earth, and when we look at the greatest republic ever created by human beings, 250 years could be considered regular maintenance. And given the nature of mankind, and our tendency toward debauchery and largesse, you bet your bottom dollar that if we get a convention today, and if we strip every amendment after 10 from 11 forward, and if we get back exactly the same Constitution that the founders gave us, if we take the federal government and put it back in its box exactly where it belongs, if we make states sovereign, bet your bottom dollar, as you said earlier, that 250 years from now they're going to have to be doing the same thing. I mean, it is going to drift. It is going to drift away. The socialist progressives who've been hatcheting away at the freedoms in this country since Adlai Stevenson.
Well, you made a comment a while ago, and it's a question that's it is asked on a regular basis, and it's a good question. If they're not following the Constitution now, what's the guarantee they'll follow the Constitution once it's amended? And the answer is history and experience has shown us that when you think about the political hurdle that it is to pass an amendment, to be ratified by 38 states, then it becomes, you know, the shelf life of an amendment is frankly longer than other parts of the Constitution. And we have examples. Just look at the Bill of Rights. You know, it's been quite a while since the Bill of Rights were ratified, but look at the First Amendment and look at what it continues to protect. Free speech. Now, no one's going to say that there's always going to be those that will constantly fight against those and bombard it, but look how it stood up over the years. Look at the Second Amendment. Still to this day, guaranteeing our right to keep and bear arms. Oh, yes, there's those that will push and fight against it, but look how it's protecting our liberty even to today. And so amendments have just a longer shelf life. They have the ability to withhold because of the kind of political and you know, it's quite a process to get it passed. But look at the political the word escapes me again, but the power that it takes to get it done, you know.
Right. Exactly. Because
political will to get it done.
Amendments are born out of a sense of political urgency is exactly right. The Constitution itself was born out of a sense of political urgency, and every amendment since has been. And this brings us to Wolverton's other point the other night, and everybody needs to go back and listen to this. It is. And that's why we do this show every Friday night, and that's why we do this show every Saturday night. We've said it over and over again, is you folks out there who are on the right side of this thing, need to understand both sides of this issue. I mean, you need to intimately understand both sides of this issue, because this is you are in the first shots of a major battle here for the soul of this nation, and you need to understand what weapons the enemy has and how to disarm those weapons. But here's another point Wolverton brings up. He says to the followers, the would-be conservatives who are naysaying this thing, he says, listen, you know, we're being told that it takes 38 states to ratify an amendment, and that's what's going to prevent us from having a liberal progressive amendment passed. Well, look, that we have the 16th Amendment. That was ratified, wasn't it, by 38 states? We have the 17th Amendment that everybody hates. Wasn't that ratified by 38 states? We have the 14th
Amendment. That's a good argument. But
listen. Okay, go ahead, Mike, or Keith.
Well, I'm going to say that I've thought of that, and I've heard that, and that's a good argument. But if we look today, it's basically about 28, 27 to 18. It changes a little bit there, roughly. If we look at legislators controlled by Republicans, it's about 27, 28, some in that neighborhood. And I guess my question to anybody is, when do we think we'll have a better time?
Exactly.
I hear people talking about the things that are happening even this week, whether, you know, you just go through the news and just make a little outline of one thing after another, and you say, well, these are absolutely terrible. Yeah, they're not good, but you know what they are? They're exactly what we need to get people to wake up and to begin to take responsibility for and pay attention to self-governance. The colonists believed in governing themselves. They governed themselves for five generations before the Revolution, and that's essentially what that was about, that they wanted the ability to govern themselves. But we have people who want to just hang out, and this citizenship comes with responsibility. And as bad as some of the things continue to be, you know, in the news, and you say, well, just what's next? May be terrible. But each one, in my opinion, is a catalyst to take us where we need to go. Go ahead.
I agree with you. I think, you know, I personally don't rest a lot of better at night knowing that 27 states have Republican majorities in both houses. When I look at the Republican majority in our state, who can't get a simple tax cut passed, and a Speaker of the House who doesn't think that it's necessary to jump on board with articles of impeachment for a governor who's clearly lawless. And when I look at the fact, and especially Keith, when I look at the fact that these people, Lisa, bless her heart, and Wolverton, bless his heart, and the lot of them who are arguing against this thing with this very argument, call themselves conservatives and call themselves Republicans. But here's the people. The people is where I rest my argument for the 38 states gave us the 16th and 17th Amendment, and even the 14th Amendment, which we can talk about separately, but the 16th and 17th Amendments were born by a people. Well, the first 10 amendments, look at that. You get the Constitution, it'll go all the way back. You got the Constitution of the United States born in a unique period in history. The Constitution of the United States, if not for that unique period in history, the Revolution, the failure of the Articles of Confederation, the meeting in Philadelphia, the people's demand for state sovereignty and for a very limited federal government, but for that unique period in history, but for the temperament of the people involved, the Constitution would not have been born. The first 10 amendments to the Constitution that immediately followed, based on the feelings of the people, the need of the people for state sovereignty, the need of the people for a limited federal government would not have been born except for that unique period in history. Likewise, the 16th, 17th Amendment would not have been born. We were in a progressive era. We were coming out of a horrible recession. People were literally starving in the richest country in the world. We're born out of a unique period in history. The 14th Amendment, predating that, in the Reconstruction era, born in a unique period in history, and for that matter, you can't talk about the 14th Amendment without talking about the fact that the 14th Amendment was not really ratified. It was forced on states. The southern states, the Confederate states, were told that unless you ratify this amendment, you're not allowed back in the United States of America. And so that's not really a ratification process. But here we are, and you said it, Keith, if not now, when? Here we are again at a unique period in history. We needn't count on Republicans. The people of this country are fed up. You have liberals, you have progressives, you have socialists, you have Republicans, you have conservatives who are saying to the federal government on this NDAA indefinite detention thing, hell no, no. We want our state sovereignty back. You have down here in Springfield, Missouri, we have a city council that just said the National Guard can join the police force to interdict drug activity in the city of Springfield. You have people on the left. You have people on the right. You have people in the center saying no. You have people, and Obamacare, give Obamacare another year. You're going to have people on the left. You're going to have people on the right. You're going to have people on the center saying no, no, hell no. And that's, you know, yeah, so okay, so it took 38 states to give us the 16th and 17th. That was a unique period in history that allowed that to be born, and we are, Keith, in my mind, we are at this period in history that allows us to bear amendments that restore the founders' constitution and put the federal government back in the box where it belongs. We're going to take a break while I field a phone call, and then we're going to come right back. Thanks for being with us, Keith.
There's a conflict in every human heart between the rational and the irrational, between good and evil. And it does not always triumph. Sometimes the dark side overcomes what Lincoln called the better angels of our nature.
No matter what time of year it is, it's never too early to start preparing for the holidays. And here at Missouri Grassroots Coalition, we're thinking of Christmas now. Why? Because we've set an ambitious goal for ourselves to raise $2,000. That's right, we want to raise $2,000 in 2013 to help some Missouri families who may be struggling in this Obama economy to provide a magical Christmas morning for their children. Last year, in 2012, Missouri Grassroots Coalition touched the lives of 15 families because of the generosity of conservatives across the state who provided us with the means to pay off their layaway accounts on Christmas Eve. This year, we'd like to be able to help twice that number of families, and we're asking you to help us with that goal. Please go to MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org and click on the Secret Santa tab. All the details are there for you to send us what you can by PayPal, check, or money order. We want to thank all who contributed last year for their generosity and hope that you will all help us continue to prove that charitable giving works best in a constitutional republic.
You better not cry. You better not pout. I'm telling you. For 7 years I dwelt in the loose palace of exile, playing strange games with the girls of the island. Now I have come again to the land of the fair and the strong and the wise. Brothers and sisters of the pale forest, children of night, who among you will run with the hunt? Now night arrives with her purple legion. Retire now to your tents and to your dreams. Tomorrow we enter the town of my birth. I want to be ready.
Okay, that's it, folks. I'm telling you right now, we are headed into the battle of our lives. And I say battle meaning battle. I'm telling you, brothers and sisters, that the war we're fighting here is probably the last step before bloodshed. I mean, if we are not successful now, it may be all over. That's how important this thing we're doing is. Some of us will disagree on what needs to come out of this. Some of us will have some feelings of trepidation maybe as we go into this. We do not want to undersell the risk of this, but at the same time, we do not want to fear it. We want to bravely go into this battle. I mean, what in the world are we afraid of? These people are out for blood, and literally sometimes, and we are either strong in our belief, that is, we are ready to put on the armor and go out into the streets, out into the arena, and fight these people at every turn, or we are cowards who are willing to hide our heads and make excuses as to why we can't keep these people from taking over our entire culture, our entire country, and the future of our generations to come. God willing, we will all see fit to engage here once the die is cast. The die is going to be cast, and I call on my conservative libertarian friends who currently cower or currently make excuses or currently find reasons out of fear, mostly, that we can't do this. When it becomes apparent to you, and it will soon, that this is going to happen, will you not join us then in this battle? Mike Moon got stuck in traffic a little bit, I think, on his way to the forum, but he's here. Mike, hey, thanks for coming. I am absolutely
You're welcome, David. Thanks for inviting me on.
I'm absolutely excited. Mike's agreed to join us, probably with an occasional miss here and there, on Friday nights at 7 o'clock. Please, everybody, set your alarm clocks right on your calendars. Mike is going to join us as just a part of a regular segment to keep us abreast of what's going on in Jefferson City. And Mike, how's it going up there in Center State?
The waters are troubled.
Oh, no, and the waters are troubled.
Yes, that's right. And some big news this week. First of all, yesterday, Nick Marshall, Republican from the Kansas City area, filed impeachment charges, or articles of impeachment, I should say, against Governor Nixon for his egregious violation of the Constitution when it comes to how same-sex married couples are treated when they file taxes. Most of the listeners probably are aware that the U.S. government did not believe that the Defense of Marriage Act was constitutional, so they allow same-sex married couples to file jointly on their tax returns.
Correct.
Missouri, however, has a constitutional amendment that says that only marriage between a man and a woman are recognized. However, the governor thought that in his infinite wisdom that it would be appropriate to allow same-sex couples who were married outside of the state of Missouri but residing in the state to be able to have the ability to file joint tax returns for Missouri. And that is a violation of the Constitution. And Nick Marshall, of course, is an extremely wise and conservative attorney and also a legislator, took that as meaning, of course, it was a violation of the Constitution. He takes his oath just as seriously as I do. And so he, back in November, mentioned that he was planning to file articles of impeachment, and that was done yesterday. In addition, I have also stated last Monday, in fact, I spoke to several representatives and the those who were present at the Republican caucus meeting about my intent to file impeachment, articles of impeachment with regard to his, I believe, his egregious violation and willful neglect of duty to issue writs of election to fill vacancies in public office. And we have had four seats, three House seats and one Senate seat, vacant for as long as 8 months. In the case of Jason Smith's 120th legislative seat, on June 5th of last year, he took the oath of office for the U.S. Congress and filling the vacancy created by Joanne Emerson. And that in itself, I believe, is waiting 8 months to issue a writ. If that's not seen as a delay, I'm not sure which dictionary he's reading out of. But it was his choice not to call the election. And then in early January, just about a week before the legislature took off or called into session again, a writ of mandamus was filed against the governor by several people in Missouri, and this writ was intended to force his hand to call for an election. Excuse me. However, he chose not to do that, and the Solicitor General, I believe his name is James Layton, working on behalf of the governor, responded to the writ and made claims that the governor has no duty or time limit to call for these elections. But I differ in that opinion, thinking that a delay is a delay. And I'll give you just an example. I was elected in a special election last year. Our former state representative, Don Ruziska, from Lawrence County, was appointed by the governor to serve on the probation and parole board. If my memory serves correctly, he resigned his office or his seat on December 22nd of 2012. And the governor waited until the last moment that he could, and probably reacting to a little bit of pressure from Lawrence County citizens, and issued a writ on the last day. And I believe that day was January 17. It could have been the 18th, perhaps. But that was the last day that was allowed by law to give the county officials enough notice so that they could call for the election. And then a week later was the date that candidates had to be certified by the Secretary of State to appear on the ballot. And so I think even though he waited just a little bit, I believe he met his constitutional duty and called for the election in due time without delay. In the situations here, Jason Smith, of course, I mentioned, was sworn into office for the U.S. Congress on June 5th, and there could have been an election that he could have called for in August, in November, and he could have called for an election this coming April as well. But he missed the deadline to call for an election for not only his seat, but another three seats, two of which were relieved of their duties as a result of his appointment to other positions. So if he's trying to declare that he was not informed of the vacancies, that's like the magical database that he spoke of it's not there, and he can't really use that as an argument, I don't believe. Now he on what? August 5th, just last week, he called for elections to be held for the three vacancies in the House seat, and they will be that election will take place August 5th. But he had a glaring mistake, I believe, or an omission, in not calling for an election for the Senate seat, which is the 22nd Senate seat. And so that, again, I think is a great argument that if a judge or jury wants to say that he did not delay in filling the three House seats, well, is it not a delay that he didn't call for the Senate seat? I believe it is.
Well, yeah. Now, I want to go back just a little bit for folks to catch up on the history, and then we're going to get a little bit more into the news making of the troubled waters. You say that Lawrence County became vacated in late December of 12. That the governor issued the writ in mid January. Now, when did you get to Jefferson City?
Well, I actually did not take my oath of office until the 22nd. I could have been seated about a week earlier, but
22nd of
April. I'm sorry,
April. Yeah,
April.
Right.
The election was April 2nd, and then I could have been seated. Of course, the vote had to be election had to be certified, and once it was, then I could have been seated about 7 or 8 days before that. But there were some extenuating circumstances in the county that I thought it was fair to not be seated until that day, because there were several who wanted to be there, and I'd already missed all but a month of the session anyway, and another few days wouldn't hurt anything, I didn't think. And so so that's why I waited.
But see, this is all I want to do then is take that timeline and lay it on the current dates, because he issued a writ on 117. Now, listen, readers, I want you to understand this is still a political seat. So after the governor issues a writ, then candidates have to file. There's requirements that candidates have to meet before they can file. And then there has to be a period of the public's due diligence of campaigning, of Mike Moon going on the local radio shows and his Republican. And then did you have primaries for that, Mike?
Well, in a sense, it was like a primary. But what happens in cases of vacancies is the central committees of each county has what they call a legislative district chair, and that chairman is responsible for holding an election of sorts. So the candidates who are viable would make themselves known to the committee, and those are the ones they need to campaign to, because only the committee can vote to nominate a candidate. And that particular nomination was held on February 4th of 2013. And then after that, the campaigning began.
Right. So then there has to be a period of time for the people of Lawrence County to hear from Mike and from the Democratic candidate. And then you finally have an election. And so what I'm saying, folks, is that even with what Mike would consider a reasonable period of time. Mike considers a seat vacated on 12/22 and a writ issued on 117 to be reasonable, and I won't argue with him. So even with a reasonable amount of time, you're talking about not getting these people representation in Jefferson City for another 4 months.
Right.
So now add to the 4 months that are built into the system, just for the politics of it, just for the campaigning, just for the appointment, just for the filing, and add that to the fact that it's been 5 months without any action from the governor to even call a writ of election, and you've got as I agree with Mike in his upcoming article of impeachment, absolutely shocking dereliction of duty on the part of the governor that goes right to the core of what a democratic republic is, and that is the representation of people in their governing body. There are people in the state of Missouri currently, by the governor of this state, being denied representation in the governing body. Am I right, Mike?
About 285,000 citizens, to be pretty close.
There you go. So, man, I can't imagine that we have to sit around and wait for a patriot like Mike Moon to do something like this. I mean, I can't believe that there aren't state Supreme Courts already tearing this governor's behind right from his body for what's going on here. I mean, a quarter of a million people who have no representation in the governing body of the state of Missouri. It's pathetic. It's criminal, Mike.
Well, when we look at the federal government, we think, and I'm one of those who think that our beloved President President Obama is pretty close to a tyrannical or a tyrant.
Yeah.
And it's been said, and I haven't heard it from his lips, but it's been said that our Governor Nixon is looking for, maybe even running for the President of the United States.
Yeah.
His actions here in the state of Missouri are pretty close to what our president is doing.
And
if we allow him to continue, well, let me say one thing. I took an oath to support the Constitution not only the United States of America, but the Constitution of Missouri. If you look at the word support, you could infer by the dictionary meaning that it means to defend.
Right.
If someone were to come to me and want to harm my family, you better believe that I'll do my best to defend them. I may not be successful, but I'll do my best. And when I think of just the citizens in Lawrence County, certainly that's a pretty good number. It's about 40,000 people. Looking across the state of about 6 million, there are people who deserve to be defended. The Constitution
yes.
was set up to defend our liberties. And if I do not take my oath seriously, and when I feel that there is, or determine that there is, a violation of the Constitution, and take action, in this case impeachment, then I've violated my oath.
Absolutely.
And there's no sense in me staying in office.
Absolutely.
So I thought about this all last weekend. And when I got back I had already determined in my mind that when I got back to Jefferson City, I would be hot on the trail of getting this started. And so I went around to a good number of representatives and didn't find one single one who was against it. I did find some who were kind of riding the fence, wanting to know what others were going to do, and I find that a little bit hard to believe. But when I got to caucus and said what I had to say, I just told them much what I just told you, that I think there's been an egregious violation of the Constitution of Missouri, and if I don't take action, then I violated my oath, and I hope that they would support me as well, and that the leadership would see this move through the House as quickly as possible. And so the articles are just about ready. I've sent them back two or three times for revision because I want it to be right when we submit it.
Right.
So there won't be any holes in it. And then I plan to go back this week and see how many people I can get to co-sign with me, because I think that's going to be extremely important to show that there is a lot of support. And so that the leadership and the GOP will move it quickly through all the processes.
Okay. Now I want to do a couple of things here. First, I want to back up to Marshall's contention that the governor violated the the Constitution with the same-sex marriage executive order.
Yep.
And point out to people that not only did the governor violate the Constitution, and that is not the most egregious article of impeachment that I believe has been brought on that particular issue. The most egregious is the second article, and that is that not only did the governor do this, I mean, a governor with little wits could accidentally violate the Constitution, but we have a governor who said, "Oh, I know it violates the Constitution, but I just don't like that." I mean, literally, folks, this guy not only violated the Constitution, but he willfully and with malice violated the Constitution because he just didn't like the way it was written. So back to the second thing that I wanted to do then was back up something, Mike, to something that you said a moment ago, and that was when you drew an analogy between what's going on in the governor's mansion and what's going on in the White House, and I want to expand that a little bit and say, when you look at Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi and Claire McCaskill and the servitude, almost worshipful nature that they have for the tyrant in chief, that brings them to a point where they will say the most ridiculous things to support him. And I want to draw an allegory between that and what's happening in our state house. The filing of bogus articles of impeachment against Governor Jay Nixon is further proof, as if any was needed. I'm quoting here, folks. The filing of bogus articles of impeachment against Governor Jay Nixon is further proof, as if any was needed, that the crazy wing has taken over the House Republican caucus. There are many serious issues facing Missouri that will require serious people to solve. These, that's you, Mike, aren't serious people. I mean, can you think... That, by the way, is the minority leader of the Missouri House of Representatives. Do you think there's not a direct correlation then? If what Mike said is accurate, and it is, that there's a direct correlation between the actions of a tyrant president and the actions of a tyrant governor, is there not a direct correlation between the actions of an insidious United States legislature and this craziness here? I mean, and then listen to this. You want a further? I mean, Mike. I'm sorry. I'm gonna name drop here, and I hope I don't get you in any trouble. But you want a further direct correlation between what's happening in the federal legislature and what's happening in the Missouri legislature. You've heard from the minority leader, listen to this. The allegations against the governor regarding his repeated violations of the Missouri Constitution are one I take very seriously and that certainly merit thorough discussion and investigation. At the same time, the act of impeachment is something that should be utilized sparingly and only in response to an egregious abuse. That was your majority leader, people. You know, you have these crazy wing patriots up here saying, for God's sake, let's just follow the Constitution. You know, let's hold people accountable for what they swore to uphold. And you've got the majority leader saying, well, I don't know. Maybe we better just back off a little bit and hold off on impeachment for something serious, something egregious. A quarter of a million people being denied representation in the capital of the state, and we need to wait for something egregious? Sorry, Mike. This is your time, and I didn't mean to preach.
I'm glad you brought all that up. And I have to be fair. My impeachment articles have not been filed yet.
No. Right.
Those comments were made about Nick Marshall's.
Right.
And I believe that he's correct. Nick is correct in filing those articles. And not only with his, but with mine and perhaps some others, which may be impending in days ahead, all have serious basis. If not, I wouldn't do this. I don't take this flippantly.
Oh, yeah,
this is extremely serious. Hopefully those words you just spoke from the leadership, I'm not going to comment on that right now, but I'll tell you what I will say is that we are rallying the troops, and I believe that we will have leadership on board with us and that we will push this through the committees, back to the floor to vote, and I'm confident that we'll have at least 82 and perhaps more than 82 votes to vote it out of the House and send it over to the Senate so they can do their due diligence and select the jurors and then have the trial. I think it's the right thing to do. And you know, I don't think that this is something we need to be throwing around flippantly.
No.
It needs to be thought through extremely carefully. I've done this, and I've talked to other people to get their input, not just for being a yes man. That's not what I'm looking for. Because
right.
if there is something that's wrong with what I'm doing, I need to know it. Because
right.
I don't want to make a fool of myself. I don't want to make a fool of the governor or the leadership or
right.
the state of Missouri.
Exactly.
Because this will be watched nationwide. And we've got to be doing the right thing. And so I do take it seriously. But I think, though, the bottom line is I swore an oath to the Constitution to defend it. And that's what I intend to do.
Good, and we're proud to have you up there doing that. And I don't, you know, I agree. I agree with you, and you know, in doing so, I have to bow an agreement even to Jones and what we quoted there. I agree with you. Articles of impeachment aren't something we just want to get up and start throwing around just because we don't like the guy. Articles of impeachment aren't something that we need to use to make a political point or to make political hay. They'd ought to be used for the most egregious, but I don't know that I totally agree with the speaker that we haven't hit that point, that even with Marshall, which you're right, Mike, this story was about Marshall's articles and as were the comments that followed. I'm not sure that a governor who says, in my mind, yeah, I know it violated the Constitution. I just wanted to do it anyway because I don't like the Constitution. Isn't pretty egregious. And yes, your mm-hmm. articles hadn't been introduced yet, and I think your articles will certainly raise the level of egregiousness at least another notch, or maybe two. I believe that you've got the fruit right there for the picking is this denial. And politically expedient denial, let's say, you know, this is, I mean, when you look at it, this is never something that you're going to prove in a court of law beyond a reasonable doubt, but when you look at the pattern here of this governor, a Democratic governor, a hardcore progressive Democratic governor, making two appointments or three appointments from the Republican majority, two positions, you cannot convince anyone, I believe, of sound mind that he didn't intentionally vacate and then leave vacant those seats, Mike.
I agree. And the primary focus that I'm looking for, and I've told people this, and I want to make it extremely clear, this is not a political game for
me.
It's one that's black and white, listed in the Constitution, that says that the governor shall issue writs of election without delay. The impeachable act that I'm looking for is willful neglect of his duty. And he has a required duty, according to Article 4, Section 4, to fill vacancies in public office. And this, I believe that he has done this with intent. He has delayed with intent so that perhaps he could keep the majority members down. But
right.
Without regard to politics, I'm looking specifically at his duty as a governor of the state. He has violated his oath, and the question needs to be answered, why?
Exactly.
And so I want him to have his day in court, and I believe he will. One thing that I would like to ask is that you, along with your listeners, would take time to periodically send a message to each and every representative, first your own representative in the House, and then to the leadership, and just to let them know that you are paying attention and that you urge them to support this articles of impeachment, as well as Dick Marshall's, and move this through the processes as quickly as possible so that we can allow the governor to give the answers and then allow the panel of seven jurists to decide whichever way they want to decide. And that's really all I'm looking for, because I think that for far too long we have allowed public officials, and in this case the governor, to do things outside their constitutional duty or neglect them entirely, and nothing has happened. I don't care whether they're Republican or Democrat. The cronyism in public office has got to stop.
Absolutely.
And unless we take action, nothing's going to change, and we'll just complain from our armchairs. And I believe that there has been an outcry from the people in Missouri for far too long without anything happening. And we've got to see this through. We can't just file articles and nothing happen, because if we do, nothing has changed and there won't be justice.
That's right. And I want to piggyback on what Mike said, because there does, you know, I do tend to get a little bit excited at times, I'm afraid. And there may be some people out there who think either I or Mike Moon, who I know personally and know his character, would ever let this become political. I want to tell you, folks, I spoke out against George Bush. I spoke out against Ronald Reagan when he was wrong. And if we had Bill Randles sitting in the State House right now, who I admire tremendously, pulling this stunt, I would be on board with the crazy wing over there on the other side to get something done. This is not political. This is serious business. This is the people's business, and that, Mike, is what you swore to uphold, and I don't think you know how much I admire and appreciate you for upholding that.
Well, I thank you for the pat on the back, but that's not what I'm looking for either, but I thank you.
No.
And I'm just hopeful that whatever transpires out of this, that we will all be satisfied with the results. I think the process needs to be allowed to work its course, and that's all I'm looking for. I've again sworn the duty. My duty right now is to file the papers, and once I've done that, then I'll continue trying to gain support from the others who didn't sign on to move this to the House. But we've got to push it as far as we can, and so again, that's where the urging from the listeners comes in. And if you know someone who's not listening, contact them and let's get this snowball, and it's appropriate for today because we've got snow on the ground, but let's get that snowball rolling, and it's rolling already. Continue to get it to grow so that it will be unmistakable to the leadership and to the other people in the state and even in the nation that the people of Missouri want to support this this articles of impeachment, not for with any malice or anything like that, but so that justice can be served. And if a governor is found not guilty, then so be it. At least we'll allow the process to go through. Now, there may be some other things that come up as a result of the process, and if it does, then hopefully we'll be wise enough to look into that and make the necessary changes. And one of the changes I think is, now this is for another topic perhaps, but I think that because we are only one of two states in the union to not allow impeachment to be heard by the Senate, I think that needs to be returned to the Senate, and because that is the way it was originally intended. That's the way the Nationals do it, and for whatever reason, and I know there's some history, I haven't studied it all together, but it was changed, and we and Nebraska, I believe, are the only two states that hear impeachments, not in the Senate, but by selecting jurists.
Well, Nebraska's unicameral, isn't it? Am I wrong?
I believe so.
Yeah,
so.
And no, you're right. And just for the sake of our listeners, really, really quickly, if you're not familiar with the Missouri State Constitution, but are familiar either from watching it unfold a couple of times in your lifetime or from knowing the U.S. Constitution, there is a difference. In the state of Missouri, the House of Representatives retains, as it does on the national level, the power to actually bring articles of impeachment against an executive. But
yeah,
it does not get tried in the Senate as it does and I hadn't studied all 50 constitutions, Mike. I didn't realize we were the only bicameral that didn't do it this way. The Senate then actually selects seven jurists who will hear the case against the executive and make a guilty or not guilty decision based on the articles of impeachment. So, okay, Mike, I tell you what, I want to, if you can stick with us I'm up against a break. I've got to take 2 minutes here. If you can stick with us, I hate to take too much of your time, and you're most gracious to join us here on Friday nights, but I have Keith Carmichael sitting here. I know he has a question or two he wants to get to you, so can you hang through the break for just
great.
A couple more minutes?
Probably stay till about 8:30,
okay.
I'd be glad to stay.
All right, I'm gonna do this quick break, and then we're gonna let Keith have a go at Mike and see what he's got for him.
We have never invested as much in public education as we should have, because we've always had kind of a private notion of children. Your kid is yours and totally your responsibility. We haven't had a very collective notion of these are our children. So part of it is we have to break through our kind of private idea that kids belong to their parents or kids belong to their families and recognize that kids belong to whole communities. Once it's everybody's
Can you talk if you haven't got a brain?
Some people without brains do an awful lot of talking.
Hey, free market capitalist Missouri business owners. Show Missouri and the rest of the country what hardworking, successful entrepreneurship looks like by advertising your business on Missouri Grassroots Radio. Get your message out to liberty-loving citizens who want to support liberty-loving capitalists. Target this unique and widespread market with your business's unique and valuable products and services. Contact us at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org for details.
And the government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth.
Perish from the earth. Listen, folks, I'm going to take 15 or 20 seconds here before we throw it over to Keith and Mike. You know, we have a quote here in some of our bumpers from Patrick Henry, the famous give me liberty or give me death quote that I think maybe even nowadays they learn in elementary school. Who knows? You know, Patrick Henry stood firmly opposed to the Constitutional Convention, and he stood firmly opposed to the Constitution of the United States. He was one of the chief of the Anti-Federalists, those opposing ratification of the Constitution. George Mason, by the way, who we hold up as a hero because of Article 5, refused to sign the Constitution and left Philadelphia opposed to the ratification of the Constitution. And these people, well, Patrick Henry, not specifically George Mason because he did give us Article 5, but Patrick Henry is held up as an icon by those who oppose the Convention of the States. He smelt a rat, if you'll remember. This is important, people, as you go out and you hear this. Well, Patrick Henry didn't believe, well, that's not true. Patrick Henry would be on our side. Patrick Henry opposed the Constitution because he believed in the sovereignty of the state. He thought the Constitution gave, the Constitution as written by the founders, mind you, gave the centralized government too much power. George Mason opposed the ratification because when it was all said and done, if you'll remember that next to the last day when he stood and demanded Article 5, he was shocked beyond belief that when this thing came back from the Committee of Style, it had been changed to the point where the people, where the states, had no more authority to call for an amendment to the Constitution. He left the Constitutional Convention convinced that the Constitution that they had written was creating a monster. So don't let anyone tell you that these two patriots would not be on our side when it comes to Article 5. They would be. And they would be because we are making the same cry that they're making. We are the state of Missouri, and we are sovereign. Here you are, federal government. You have this box. Stay in it. Okay, that's my speech coming out of the break. And now, hey, Keith, are you still with us, buddy?
Still with you, and I want to just pick up on what you just said there. Article 5 was the key to the ratification of the Constitution. If they hadn't had Article 5 in the Constitution, it would have never passed, certainly the harder battle, but it was so close, you know, on nearly every case, it was very close. And, you know, they said, well, you know, it passed by 6 votes here and it passed by 7 votes. Well, what that meant is 3 people changed their votes or 2 people. I mean, it was as close as 2 or 3 in many of those states. But without Article 5, it wouldn't have been even close because they really worked hard to promise and to point out that should this government get out of control, that the framers had provided an escape, a fix, a rudder, if you will. And so if you go back and look at that ratification debate, Article 5 is not just an afterthought. It's not just a, you know, it's just not something that just happens to be in there. It was the key to ratification in so many instances. And now we're afraid to use it. You know, if we had the founders on their sitting here this evening in the studio and on the radio, and we mentioned that we were afraid and there was so much uncertainty, and, you know, it's just we're not sure how what's going to happen, and I said last night I don't know whether they would laugh or cry. They would find it disgusting because they were veterans of conventions, and that's the mode in which they used, that was their mechanism to hammer things out.
They would say to us exactly what they said then, and that is, if you're willing to trade all the security that a welfare state gives you, if you're willing to trade all the security that the NDAA gives you, if you're willing to trade all the security that an omnipotent federal government gives you for liberty, for the liberty that we gave you, then you deserve neither. That's what they tell us.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Keith, did you have something for Mike while he's here?
Well, Mike and I have had a chance to visit a little bit since we were on last anyway, and I don't know if he's probably had opportunity to tell folks, maybe this might be the first time you might be able to just tell a little bit about the Mount Vernon experience. You know, I said last night what it might have been like to be actually meet back on George Washington's estate in Mount Vernon, and, under those circumstances, what was it like?
Well, Keith, I have to be fair to the listeners and to David to let people know that you're my friend, and I think so much of you and for all that you're doing to further the cause of the Convention of States. And Keith has been a great asset to the Convention of States project. And I might say, too, you probably have already heard this from Keith before, but if you need more information about this, go to conventionofstates.com, and there's a great wealth of resources that you can learn more about and become involved in helping us push this as well. Now, with the Mount Vernon Assembly, what a thrill it was to be there. I mean, just the historic place to realize that once long ago, that's where our first president lived. And it was just exciting. And not only that, but to find that there were at least 100 other legislators from across the state representing between 32 and 33 states in the Union, all with the desire to learn more about what the Convention of States is all about. And what we found there that day was that there was, and I believe still is, great interest in restraining and limiting the power and authority of the federal government, because I think everyone realizes that we have a runaway government, and they in and of themselves won't relinquish any of their power and authority. And even looking at the 10th Amendment, which gives Missouri and other state sovereignty, the government has usurped their authority. They're doing things that are not authorized in Article 1, Section 8, especially with the Congress and the President and even the courts. And so this is an opportunity by taking advantage of Article 5, which outlines two methods on how we can amend the Constitution and take back some of the power that the Congress has usurped from the President and the courts and return it to the states where it should be. And with what happened in Virginia in early December, that was just a catalyst for continued planning and defining what the scope of a convention of the states would be and determining what limits that we could place on the delegates and the commissioners that were appointed by each state legislature and how that might look. And, of course, at that time, and even now, we have no legislative authority to put anything in stone. But at least some drafts are being developed. Some applications have been modeled, which Missouri is following, and that will keep all the applications germane so that when we get 34 applications delivered to the U.S. Congress, they will have no reason and no question at all that they're for the same amendment or topic, and they will have no alternative but to call a convention of states. And I think this is probably one of the last efforts that we can take as a union to save ourselves, because we have a runaway government spending $17 trillion today. And can you imagine how much that is? I mean, that's just blows my mind.
Mind-boggling, yeah. Okay, Mike, I'm watching the clock. I'm watching the clock for you. I'm watching the clock for you here, Mike.
Okay.
Real quick, before I let you go. Is there a plan for a follow-up on this to keep things coordinated, to keep things a follow-up meeting? Or?
Oh, you mean with the convention? Yes.
Yeah.
There's one planned in May, I believe it is,
great,
this year, and also December.
Great.
And we'll have more to put on the table And I think you'll hear more about it. We had very little media coverage in December, but I think that because of what's happening in the states today, in
right.
Georgia and Florida and Indiana and South Carolina and soon to be in Missouri, that there will be continued and increased interest in the media. Now, that's when you have media interest, usually that they're not favorable to something like this, and
right.
I don't think Congress will be either. But they're not going to have a choice because this is a movement that is not going to die, especially when you have the likes of Mark Levin and Rush Limbaugh and Sean Hannity, Dr. Michael Ferris, and Mark Meckler involved.
Keith Carmichael.
I don't think this is going to go away.
Yeah.
And Keith Carmichael, too. Yeah, he and a man named John Putnam are doing great work. And
yep.
I applaud them for taking their time and their effort and spending their own money.
Absolutely.
To be away from their families and
your name,
work this. So,
your
so
name,
I appreciate you, Keith.
Your name was dropped on the Mark Levin show the other day, by the way. And
Keith Carmichael?
No, Mike Moon.
Mark,
oh, no
Moon. Kidding.
Yeah.
How about that?
Well, he was and reading.
Don't forget the two folks that came on
that.
This week. You know, Senator Tom Coburn, he's not a lightweight, and Mike Lee. And you also, if you haven't heard, officially, David Barton of Wall Builders is that's actually on the net. You can go on Convention of States, and you'll see the link as well about David Barton. If you know David, you'll know that he's a wealth of knowledge and historical background.
Yeah.
But I appreciate your kind words, Mike. I think my mom would really appreciate that. My dad wouldn't believe a word of it, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, they're heartfelt, Keith, and I'm sorry that I have to leave so early. If I'd have known you were going to be
I would have
rearranged it. Maybe we can talk a little longer the next time. But, David,
Thank
you so much for allowing me to be a part of the
Mike.
Show. And if the listeners would like more information, again, about Convention of States, go to conventionofstates.com, and they're welcome to contact me at my house address at mike.moon@house.mo.gov about either the Convention of States project articles of impeachment that we're looking at for our current governor in Missouri. So I'd love to hear from you. Let me know what your opinion is and other thoughts you might have. And again, thank you, David, for having me on, and appreciate again what you're doing, Keith.
We'll talk to you next Friday, Mike. Wow, thank you very, very, very much. Listen, you folks out there in Lawrence County, this is an election year again, and you couldn't do any better than this. Keep it in mind. This is the real deal. Mike, thanks. Appreciate you being here. We'll talk to you next Friday.
All right. Thank you, David.
Bye-bye, buddy.
Bye-bye.
Dave, people no longer have the opportunity to say, you know, there's nothing I can do. There's a lot of folks who want to take that out. I just don't know what to do. There's nothing I can do. There's something everybody can do, and Mike really gave us the key right there. I said it wrong a few weeks ago, and it's easy to get that website wrong, but it's simply Convention of States, conventionofstates.com. And if you want to get where you get messages statewide every time there's something going on with Convention of States, be sure to go on there and go to the Action Center. Now, if you just leave your email and your zip code, that really doesn't get you started. You need to go to the Action Center, go in there, and do what's called a volunteer profile. And that way, when a message goes out statewide about what's happening in Missouri, you'll get that message. And so I want you to be a part of that. There's no longer an opportunity to say, there's nothing I can do.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And this week, by the way, I want one other thing while I'm on the Convention of States subject. You need to go on there this week, and I'd go on there now because there's a town meeting on the 13th. We've talked a little bit about Robert Nadelson from time to time on this program. He's going to be on a town hall meeting. That's the 13th, the evening. It'll be 7 p.m. Maybe make sure that's not Eastern time. It'll be announced on there. If you go to Convention of States and, you know, register for that and participate in that town hall meeting with Robert Nadelson, you'll be glad you did.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to come back. Keith and I are going to wrap up, and then that's going to be it for tonight. We had a great time. We want to express our thanks once more to Mike Moon, who serves the people of Lawrence County and the people of the state of Missouri, quite frankly, very, very well up there in Jefferson City. Then we're going to lay out the groundwork for what's coming up.
The emergency destruct system is now activated.
Have you joined Missouri Grassroots Coalition yet? The results of the 2012 election proved that the grassroots conservatives need to work harder to make their voices heard in government. The best way for Missouri conservatives to make their voices heard is to join together within the Missouri Grassroots Coalition Network and show our elected that we are a strong, unified, conservative voice in Missouri. Go to the website, MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, and click on the Join tab. Give us your contact information so that we can keep you updated on the latest developments in Jefferson City and beyond. Also, sign up for Grassfire Alerts so that you can get immediate notifications when we need to call grassroots conservatives together in action. Use the MGC network to help your grassroots organization speak with a louder voice combined with grassroots groups across the state. Together, we can strengthen the conservative voice in Missouri.
They told me that you had gone totally insane. And that your methods were unsound.
Are my methods unsound?
I didn't see any method at all.
Okay, quickly, before Keith and I wrap up our chit-chat tonight on Article 5 and lay out tomorrow night and the next couple of weeks here, I want to remind you all about what we spent most of our time with Mike about. That is the Articles of Impeachment, two of them now. Well, one currently filed by Representative Marshall, and one hitting the floor early next week from our own friend, Representative Mike Moon, both dealing with egregious violations of the power of the governor. You've been asked, and I'm going to ask you again, to contact your state legislator. That's your member of the House of Representatives for now. That's where this article of impeachment has to emanate from. The House of Representatives, go to house.mo.gov. That's house.mo.gov. In the left-hand menu, there's a list of representatives. You find your representative's name on that list. And that will link you to directly to your representative's email and a phone number to your representative's office. Use both, call and email. Then email the Speaker of the House and the House Majority Leader. And email Mike Moon at mike.moon@house.mo.gov. And tell him how much you appreciate what he's done and what he's doing. This is an on-fire young man up there in Jefferson City fighting for you, fighting for people who, quite frankly, because of our governor's negligence, have no one fighting for them. So it's house.mo.gov. Find your legislator. Write to him and tell him to get behind these articles of impeachment. Advance these articles of impeachment. Use the same website to write to the Speaker of the House and the Senate, the House Majority Leader, and then drop a quick note to Mike Moon and tell him how much you appreciate him. Okay, Keith.
Dave, I'm sure that the state of Missouri is not going to send those folks a notice who are not represented that they don't have to pay their Missouri state taxes this year.
No,
I'm sure they want their taxes, so I'm sure they want they understand that they'd like to be represented as well.
They would. Okay, Keith, we're going to do a quick wrap on tonight's show. We talked for a while earlier in the show about the Article 5 Convention of the States, how it's, and some of Wolverton's arguments from the other night. We're going to get back tomorrow night to argument two of the thing that we talked about earlier. I had planned on not having time to get to that tonight. As it turns out, we used up the whole 2 hours anyway, but with a couple of interruptions in the background from my grandson. But there's nothing in the world better than grandkids, so I don't complain. And
they're the reason we do what we do, aren't they, Dave?
They are. They are. So what have you got? We were talking actually about how, you know, Patrick Henry, he was opposed to the Constitution. He was adamantly opposed. He was one of the leaders of the Anti-Federalists. Mason, as we said, actually came away from the Constitutional Convention refusing to sign the Constitution, to put his name on the bottom of it. And both of them, well, Patrick Henry specifically, is held up by the other side of this thing as someone who would be on their side. And I say just the opposite. Both of these gentlemen, their only opposition to the Constitution was that it stole sovereignty from the states. They didn't even like as much power as the federal government was given under the original Constitution, and specifically Article 1, Section 8.
You know, I have a friend of yours that said that late recently that those folks were right. The anti-federalists were right, Well, that's a valid argument, but you sure can't say that they were right and in the same breath say, but they never would use Article 5. That was actually the mode of getting them to accept the Constitution. The ones that did accepted it because Article 5 was in there. So if they were right, you surely couldn't say in the same breath they would be afraid to use Article 5.
That's right.
They would be the first ones to make sure it was in there. And then they would be the first ones to use it if they needed to.
And as opposed as Mason was to even creating a strong centralized government, and that opposition ran deep. It ran deep enough that Mason left the convention without signing, refusing to sign. But as deep as his conviction was on that, we owe to that conviction that argument next to the last day of the convention, which gave us Article 5 in its current form. It is that when Article 5, if you listeners who've been with us for a while, you already know this. You've heard me tell the story three or four times. When Article 5 came back from the Committee of Style, in the written Constitution that was presented on the next to the last day of the Constitutional Convention for approval, it left all power to amend up to the federal legislature. Not how it headed into the Committee of Style, by the way, but how it came out of the Committee of Style. It was George Mason, the guy who disliked the idea of ceding any state sovereignty to a central power, who stood up at that point and said, this isn't going to work. This isn't going to work. The states have to maintain the right to take this thing back under control. Because Mason had no qualms about it. He said, because this federal government is going to become a monster. He didn't say, in case it becomes a monster. He didn't say, well, maybe it might. He said, this thing is going to become an all-devouring superpower, and it's going to try to put all these states under its thumb. And we've got to fix this. We've got to fix Article 5 so that the states can say no more, no more. And
well, they tried. And they tried, and they knew. And what a profit. They, you know, and their wisdom. They spent months looking at governments throughout history. They spent a lot of time looking at a lot of at historical precedents and so on, and they did a great job, but they knew that that was going to be a danger, and they put that in there for a reason. There's no question about it. You know, some folks who are talking today and just they're saying they want 100% guarantee that this convention is just going to go off like they want it to, and that's difficult because, you know, Missouri legislation, instructions, application can only bind Missouri delegates. It can't bind or give instructions or hold Nebraska or New Mexico or Kansas delegates to anything. That's because those two are sovereign entities. They're sovereign states. They want 100% guarantee, and there's only one thing you can say with 100% certainty is that we stand to lose this republic if we do not use this process.
And listen to this, folks. Listen. Okay, I know for conservatives as well as liberals that this is a shocker, and is something that many conservatives have a hard time living with. Okay, the governing of 300 million people is an exercise in compromise. It is and always will be the first. The United States Constitution, brothers and sisters, is an exercise in compromise. The slave issue was compromised. Now, we make a big deal out of that. We talk about that all the time. But the makeup of the legislature was a compromise. The bicameral was a compromise. The executive department of government was a compromise. The judicial branch was a compromise. Everything in the Constitution was hard fought. Was hard fought between 13 delegates from 13 states who jealously guarded the sovereignty of their own state. Everything was a compromise, and so understand. We are going to hold the line. We're going to hold the line for state sovereignty and for a return to the founding principles, for a return to the Constitution that our founders gave us, for a return to a limited federal government squarely contained in the box that was intended for it. And it's going to be
fun. I love Michael Ferris. Michael Ferris made a comment. He said, you know, we'll let them take care of the national parks and the monuments in Washington. That they can do that.
Yeah.
He's talking about the federal government.
Right.
You know, and some people are puzzled a little bit about when they go on the Convention of States website and they do reading. I had a couple people say they're puzzled because we don't do a lot of time. They don't spend a lot of time talking about specific amendments. You know, Mark Levin, his book, after the first chapter, those are example amendments to get people thinking about the possibilities. But Convention of States, they haven't spent much time at least promoting any specific amendment, because that's you can cause some fragmentation. People, you know, it frankly doesn't make a lot of difference what the amendments are, because you have to call a convention or it's irrelevant. And
that's
so
right.
We're going to put all of our energy into making sure that we call the convention. And, yes, we are going to have to put a certain amount of trust in state legislatures. The framers put our liberty in the hands of state legislators, and if they're all like Mike Moon, which I know that they aren't like Mike Moon, but the majority of the ones I know are good, solid folks, and if they're not, then they need to be doing something else, and that's another matter for another time.
That's right. And when Keith says, listen, folks, when Keith says to put our trust in the state legislatures, he's not implying, I had it, this very question just popped up on chat, he's not implying that that it will necessarily be a state legislator who represents the state of Missouri at this convention. They will pick the delegates. Exactly right. They will choose the delegates. It could be Keith. Could be Keith. Could be Mike. So there we go. Keith, thanks as always for joining us on the state sovereignty show. We're not the only ones on Missouri Grassroots Radio. We're here on Friday and Saturday night with the State Sovereignty Show. On Tuesday night, Cynthia Davis comes along. If you want to hear a view opposed to the Article 5 Convention, if you want to hear it again, since I get two nights, listen to Lisa Payne Nager, the Culture Vigilante, on Wednesday night. Do go back and listen to Lisa's last Wednesday show. Wolverton is very well spoken. He is the face of the opposition on this thing, and it is important that you get it. It is important that you know and understand. It's important that you know that he's wrong, and that's what we deal with here. It's important that you know that these people are well-intentioned. They are not to be ridiculed for their position, you know, I hesitate to say we'd ought to have sympathy for it. It is born out of fear. It is a natural fear, and it is not an unhuman fear, and it's not, quite frankly, a totally unrealistic fear. But you know, there comes a time, brothers and sisters, when you've got to say, if we're going to win this war, we've got to take that hill right there. It's gonna cost us. It's gonna be a dear and fierce fight. But if we're going to win this war, we've got to take that hill right there first. And we're on the hill. And the bullets of this battle are flying. They're flying now, and it's only going to get worse before it gets better. So gear up. Get ready. And dig in. We're on the road. Keith, we'll talk to you. We'll talk to you when we talk to you. You're welcome to call in here any Friday or Saturday night, and we always enjoy it.
Enjoy being on, Dave, and appreciate the time. You bet.
Thanks for all you do.
Have a great evening.
You too, sir. And that's it for tonight. We've just about used up all of everyone's time. We really appreciate Mike Moon. We're looking forward to him on Friday nights, and we know it's, you know, I want you to understand what the life of a legislator in Jefferson City is. He's actually away from home 4 nights a week to 5 nights a week, depending on his committee schedules and things. And so he comes dragging his tail home Friday night, exhausted and totally worn out, in the case of Mike Moon, from a hard-fought week. And I want you to understand that this is his quality family time he's giving up for us on Friday nights. I want you to know that. I want you to appreciate it, and I want you to understand it. I want you to come along every Friday night and listen to what Mike has to say to us about what's going on up there. He doesn't hold himself up as knowing more than you or me. He doesn't hold himself up as anything but someone who is placing himself at your service. I mean, there's no other way to say it. I mean, he's out there on the front lines taking the bullets for you and me. God bless you all, and thanks for listening.
God bless America.
Missouri Grassroots Radio is brought to you by the Missouri Grassroots Coalition, a cooperative of independent Missouri groups whose aim is to restore constitutional government. Visit us at MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org, check out our Facebook page, and follow us on Twitter. You can contact us anytime at info@MissouriGrassrootsCoalition.org. God bless and keep you till next time we meet.